This is the National Conversation with All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Martin. Governments all over the world shut down schools, shuttered non-essential businesses, and grounded planes with one goal in mind: to slow the spread of the coronavirus. If you've heard this phrase once, you've heard it a million times. The aim was to flatten the curve, preventing a sharp peak in COVID-19 patients and avoiding healthcare systems from becoming overwhelmed. Have those efforts succeeded? And what can be done to keep the rate of infections lower? NPR's Ping Huang covers global health, and she is with us now to answer some of your questions on the topic. Ping, it's so good to hear your voice, even if I can't see you. Hi.
Hi, Michelle. It's great to hear you too.
Well, first, let's get a snapshot of where we are today. Is the curve flattening?
So the U.S. curve is slowly flattening, but it is not flat yet. Cases around the country are still growing, but the good news is that they are growing at a slower rate. And there are some areas of concern. So in Georgia, for example, Georgia is planning to open its hair salons and barbershops and tattoo parlors tomorrow, but cases there are still growing faster than the country as a whole. And we also have to remember that we still have a testing problem, so it's hard to know whether these numbers are showing the whole picture.
Our next question is about something called herd immunity. So before we hear the question, will you briefly explain what that is?
Yeah, sure. So herd immunity is the idea that if enough people in one place are immune to the virus, then the virus doesn't have any new people to spread it to, and so it just dies out.
Okay, so here's the question. It's from Amy in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
I'm wondering what percent of our population has to have gotten the coronavirus in order to achieve herd immunity. With all of the excellent social distancing we've been doing, is it possible to get there?
Ping.
Yeah, so that's something that we've heard a lot of questions about. A lot of people are curious about it. And researchers I spoke with put that number at around 70%. So that means that 7 out of every 10 people have to be immune to COVID-19 for herd immunity to happen. And for the second part of Amy's question, which is if we keep the curve down, can we get there? The answer seems to be not anytime soon. So we're currently 4 months into this pandemic, and we're starting to see some early numbers on how many people in different parts of the world have antibodies to COVID-19, and the numbers are pretty low. So in Los Angeles, it was about 4% of the population. In Germany, it was like 14%. So those numbers are a long way off from that 70% that experts say we'll probably need to get to for herd immunity.
Another question about herd immunity comes from Felix. He lives in Alaska, and he says he wants to visit his elderly mother, but he doesn't want to risk infecting her. So he says he'd rather get sick now and get it out of the way. And here's his question.
Why is there no option to get infected to build up immunity? Why is there no public discussion about getting deliberately infected to build up herd immunity?
Ping.
So here's the problem. COVID-19 is still a new disease, and we can't really predict who's going to get very sick from it. So we know that generally people who are older or have underlying conditions are more prone to getting it severely. But we've also seen cases of healthy, younger people getting really sick and in some cases dying from it. So public health officials aren't recommending that people go out and purposefully catch it because they can't predict who might get super sick from it. And it would also result in a lot more cases that would possibly overflow hospital capacity and make it hard to give care to everyone who would need it. And also, building up herd immunity is a strategy that they considered in the UK, but their models showed that it would lead to an excessive number of deaths, and so they've decided not to pursue it there.
Hmm. Wow. Well, I mean, it sounds like Felix is thinking about, you know, the 18th century and smallpox, when that was a strategy that some people employed, but that was a very different time, wasn't it? So
absolutely.
Lots of ethical questions involved there. All right. So now many people want to know whether one can build up resistance to the coronavirus. Here's a question about that.
Hi, this is Corey Trenda from Southern California. I'm hoping that in the most vulnerable communities around the world, people living there might have a higher resistance to COVID-19 because their immune systems have had to successfully fight off so many more germs and pathogens than those of us in the more developed nations. And I wonder if there's any evidence that this increased resistance might be a possibility.
Ping, might that be a possibility?
So I spoke to global health researchers, and they all told me probably not. So like we just mentioned, since COVID-19 is a new disease, scientists think that the whole world is susceptible to it. And it also seems to be more severe in people with underlying conditions, which makes researchers really worried for people in developing countries. Because when you think about serious underlying conditions like HIV and tuberculosis, poor countries carry the heaviest burdens of those. And also, another thing that they're really worried about is children in developing countries, because so far, we've seen kids getting mostly spared from the worst impacts of the virus. And kids in China and the U.S. are generally pretty healthy, but in places where kids are malnourished or are already very sick, the concern is that they could get sicker from COVID because they're less able to fight off the virus.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with NPR science reporter Ping Huang, and she's answering your questions mainly about immunity. And you can still send us questions at npr.org/nationalconversation or share it on social media using the hashtag NPR Conversation. Ping, one listener wants to know how different the various strains of coronavirus are. Could a vaccine be developed that protects against an entire class of the virus?
So right now, we know of 7 different coronaviruses that can infect humans, and 4 of them cause the common cold. And the other 3, which are SARS, MERS, and now this new coronavirus, those can cause severe respiratory illness and death. So making one vaccine that protects against all 7 of them is going to be pretty hard. One researcher I spoke with said it's going to be at least as hard as it is to make a flu vaccine that protects against all strains of flu. And as we all know, we get a new flu vaccine every year, so we really haven't managed to do that yet. But what might be possible is a vaccine that protects against 2 coronaviruses that are pretty similar. So our new coronavirus is in the same family as the one that causes the SARS outbreak in 2003. And so it might be possible to make a vaccine that could protect against both SARS and COVID-19. And that's something researchers are looking into right now.
All right, let me see if I can squeeze in one more. Speaking of vaccines, our next listener has a question about that. Here it is.
Hi, this is John from Portland, Oregon. There's a lot of discussion both in the news and in the president's daily briefings about a vaccine being developed, but it is very U.S.-centric. How are federal agencies such as the NIH and the FDA working with other countries in developing a vaccine, many of which have world-class resources and people?
Yeah, so John's right. There are a lot of different countries developing vaccines for COVID-19 right now. The World Health Organization says there's at least 70 different vaccines in the works, and China and the U.S. already have vaccines in clinical trials, which means that they're starting to test them on people to see if they're safe and effective. Germany is another country that has one ready as well. So vaccine developers say that they're collaborating, but there's also competition too. And WHO says that they're working to make sure that when there is a vaccine, it's distributed equitably and given to places with the most need.
That is NPR's Ping Huang. Ping, thank you so much.
Thank you.